Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Hello, I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with the most interesting business leaders who have wonderful stories to share and are here to freely share their journeys, their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And in fact, my guests are so compelling and so insightful that this podcast was written up on Inc.com as one of the best business podcasts you need to be listening to now and has been mentioned on Entrepreneur and MSNBC. Our topic today, this is a big one for me, how to thrive in the gig economy where old jobs are obsolete and freelancing is the future, with my guest, Olga Mizrahi. Now, she was recently featured in Forbes, Fast Company, and Inc. magazine, and she is an instructor of the digital marketing program for the University of California, Irvine. And she is a national speaker and marketing expert on personal branding and the gig economy, Airbnb, Museum Store Association, KNX Small Business Summit, which is a local Southern California business owner. Oh, she is a local Southern California business owner. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to cough, so I'm kind of not really paying attention to what I'm reading here. She's also a blogger for entrepreneurs and freelancers at chunkofchange.com and is a small business columnist for the Long Beach Post. She is a lifelong advocate of the advancement of women and has served on the board of directors for Women in Business Los Angeles, Stand Up for the Cure, as well as California Women's Conference. Olga, welcome to your Barton Success Radio. I have your book in front of me, and I've got to say, I've really been looking forward to this chat.
Thank you so much for having me, Denise. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Well, you know, as you know, our audience probably does as well, I'm a virtual assistants industry expert. I've been doing this for quite a while. I'm a web developer. You are in my wheelhouse here. So I have been watching the gig economy just explode over the last 5 or 6 years more than anything, but there's an awful lot going on in it, good and bad, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, so the gig economy is obviously a hot topic. I think there's a lot of confusion around it, so maybe we can just start with defining what the heck it is. You think that's a good spot?
I think that's a great start.
So,
a lot of people will come into this, you know, this economy, if you will, and they'll say, and I see this all the time, and it's one of my pet peeves in the Facebook groups that I lurk around in, but they may have been a virtual assistant for about 5 minutes, and 10 minutes later, they're mentoring and training another virtual assistant, and I've almost broken teeth over that, but we'll get down to that too, but yes, please start at the top.
So I think that when we think of freelancers, that's nothing new, right? Like, a large part of my audience happens to be translators. And I would say that translators are probably like your original gig workers, right? Like, if you think about it, they've been around since the beginning of time. And they've also not been full-time employees for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. They tend to be on project, and then they're gone. We know that freelancers exist. Like, freelancers, like, if you think of somebody who writes for a publication, most likely they are, again, just hired for a particular article, and then they're gone, right? If you think of traditionally freelance photographers, if somebody you hired for your wedding, right? They're not your full-time employee. You hired them for that project, and then they're gone. So it's not that, you know, temporary work is new. What is different is that when we've infused the technology, it's now been a crazy growth, like a hockey stick. And it's partnered with the fact that when you're a traditional employee, you kind of don't have that job security anymore. I mean, who has a pension anymore? A lot of times you come in without benefits. A lot of times you start as a temp to perm position, and the perm never happens, right? So when people think of the gig economy, you know, immediately they think of something like Uber or Airbnb. But in reality, is it all freelance jobs? What about the temp and contract workers out there? Even if they're hired offline, are they now giggers? Well, the answer is yes to all of the above. And that's because the gig economy is incredibly diverse. It can include those temporary workers and contract workers, but also consultants, freelance CEOs, entrepreneurs even, solopreneurs, and all the people that are using the platforms from these on-demand services. So you could be an owner of your own company like I am, but I'm also an Airbnb superhost. And I'm even an Airbnb experience host. So even myself, I'm on both sides, right? I hire gig workers, and I'm a gig worker myself. People can hire me off of certain platforms. And as far as these platforms are concerned, there are dozens, if not hundreds. So again, we might think of Uber or Lyft or Airbnb or Upwork, but in reality, there are so many. And they fall into all sorts of different categories. Just the other day, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed, and I got an ad for an on-demand, like, massage app where, like, a certified masseuse comes to your house or to your office with everything. And I was like, oh, that sounds so good, you know? And before, maybe that wouldn't have been something that would have popped up in my feed, right? And that's true for dog walkers, right? You've heard of Rover, and you've heard of some of these other things. And so there really are dozens of these platforms. I think that what's surprising about all of that is a study conducted by MGI, the McKinsey Institute, just at the end of 2016, showed that only 4% of workers are actually aware of all of these platforms. So even though we kind of have Uber as a verb, right, there's very few of us that actually utilize and kind of go and jump in and see what these platforms can offer.
I know. I'm very aware of that myself, but not to the extent that you are. So you've mentioned a few things that, you know, I kind of went, well, yeah, that makes sense, but I never thought of it. Like you, I do both. I'm on both sides of that equation. What is an Uber? What did you say about, not Uber, I'm sorry, Airbnb?
Oh, just that Uber is a verb now, right?
No, I mean, at the top of the show when you said you are a master, let me go back to that. Are you an Airbnb host? I'm lost.
Oh, okay. So Airbnb is a platform where you can go and rent a home or a room, right, when you're out vacationing somewhere. But it also is, they've expanded into other areas. So they also run something called Airbnb Experiences. And it's only been out for a little bit over a year, and it's available in about, 15, 20 cities, something like that. And so when you're actually in a city, you can hire somebody through Airbnb Experiences and have a unique experience in that city. So I'm in Southern California, so I go out once a week on the water on a paddleboard, and I thought to myself, well, I usually take out somebody when I go out. If it works out with my schedule, I'll just invite somebody who might be visiting through Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And so I don't have it available very often, usually about once or twice a month, but I open it up, and every so often someone joins me that's visiting the Los Angeles area, and we can talk marketing on the water, and it's kind of nice. It's a different type of experience than you would expect.
See, I hadn't heard of that. I was very familiar with Airbnb, but I wasn't aware of the others, so that's good to know. So basically, when people create these gigs, if you will, as part of the gig economy, they don't just kind of stick with one thing. There are outshoots. There are other ideas. They're continuing to grow and serve a different part of the population, which I find fascinating.
There's a lot of it's incredibly diverse, Denise, right? Because sometimes we, of course, have to check that box where we're making our rent, right? So whatever that thing is that you are best at, you're going to go out there and you're going to put your best face forward and you're going to really attract people to you that are a good fit. And ideally, you form partnerships with people that not only do you get to work with them on that particular project, but they'll hire you again and again and again, or they'll mm-hmm. refer you out. And mm-hmm. then other people will hire you so that you can continue doing that work that you love. But what about if you're doing work that you don't love? You're just really good at it. Like, you know, for me, I'm not the biggest fan of bookkeeping, right? I have a bookkeeper that comes in who's also part of the gig economy, right? She comes in once a month and helps me with my business and my books. And I think that, you know, if that's your passion, that's great. But sometimes it's not your passion, and that's still okay. So that's where something like Airbnb Experiences comes in. So, like, in Los Angeles, it's pretty crazy. We have these experiences where you can take a taco tour, or you can, you know, go to a series of comedy clubs, or you can do things that are in the entertainment industry, like see some things behind the scenes, because people are opening up their expertise or their access mm-hmm. even better, right? Like, I'm giving access to people that want to come out on the water to our beautiful harbor area and this island that we get to kind of paddle around. And that's probably something that not everybody keeps their paddle boards, you know, accessible mm-hmm. to the ocean at all times and can take somebody out on that. So that's one of the reasons probably that Airbnb said, oh, we want you to host this, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to just, I have some paddle boards in my garage and I can pop them on my car and meet you down at the beach, right? So there's all these different things that you can do, but that doesn't negate, I think, the fact that most people's anxiety resides with paying their rent, right? They're not thinking about, oh, I could offer a gourmet experience on Airbnb Experiences. Like, that may or may not pay the rent. That may fulfill a different part in your life that, you know, gets you excited and gets you out there and, you know, living life. I think it's something that we all should explore, because we get so bogged down with the things that are the busyness of life and the everyday and whatever, that, hey, if I get to bring in something that has my passion, that's completely a different side of me, and that can be energizing to the other pieces, right?
Mm-hmm.
But please don't think that I make my rent from, you know, taking people out, right. you know, twice right. a month on a paddleboard. That doesn't happen.
And the thing is, I'm like you. I mean, I am a techie nerd, and I live, breathe HTML. I, you know, dream in short codes. It's embarrassing. And I can work in Infusionsoft, but I'd rather be hit by a beer truck. I don't know what it is about that platform. I hate it. I can do it, but you know what? I won't do it. So I have people on my team who are expert at it, who can get in there, do whatever needs to get done. They're not grumbling or gnashing their teeth, and they do a perfect job.
Yeah. So, but you know enough about it to be that manager role. And we can talk about how, in some ways, there's a way to kind of bring on these type of side gigs where, you know, at one point you were the person that was doing that code, right? And
oh, yeah.
as you grew, you brought in these other folks that you can manage because you can speak their language. And yet, that frees you up to do other things with your business. And so that's a kind of a natural progression for some people, not all, because some will always want to be in that production role. They don't want to be in a management role. They don't want to be kind of overseeing a team or anything like that. You know, that comes with its own set of, you know, issues. And so it is perfectly okay to live in the gig economy as a specialist, right? In fact, when you think about the classic gig economy type of contract position, it's pretty much somebody in computer or IT. It's someone who has a specialist, who's a specialist in some sort of programming or web designing or, you know, something that's very specific to information technology as a skill. However, mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating that now you're seeing so many administrative, accounting and finance, customer service, medical and health, project management, and education type positions out there that before would have been brought in. In fact, mm-hmm. if you think about it, and you probably deal with some of these people in your role, there are a whole heck of a lot of temporary HR managers.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that is the size of the company, right? Like the company will bring on somebody that's a consultant or a contractor that will help shape certain policies and procedures and hiring, things like that. But, I mean, it's interesting to me that that would have been a position that would have never been, at least not to this degree, outed as being not proprietary to the company. And you have that again and again and again.
Yeah,
which brings me to another thing, the shame that's associated with being a contract worker or a virtual worker. I think that that's no longer there. I think that's something that our smartphones have beat out of us.
So
15 years ago, I'm sorry, Denise?
I didn't know there was any shame attached to it.
Oh, certainly. When I started my agency in 2004 with a partner, we went out there. I came from an e-commerce background. I was director of e-commerce for a company in Los Angeles. I left that job. She was a brilliant graphic designer. We formed Oso Design, which is still a company that I own today here in Long Beach. And our unique value proposition when we went out there was that we offered both print and online design that was integrated and good, because at the time, that was difficult to find. And when we would go to clients' offices and their conference rooms and bring together a team that was beyond just us two, so when we would bring in a copywriter and a senior programmer and another senior designer and all that stuff, everybody would have to be issued the drug dealer favorite, disposable cell phones, so that we would all have, you know, so that we would all be walking in as a team with physical business cards that had our phone numbers looking like they were about two digits apart, right? So that that would imply that we are sitting in a brick and mortar and I, as a manager, was micromanaging this team, because that's what clients wanted to see. They would never come to our studio, so they wouldn't know who was there and who was working from a Starbucks and who was working from home. They would never come to our studio. But it made them feel like we were legit, that we were, you know, because those virtual agencies, they're not legit. And so we would get the job based on that kind of persona that was put out forward. Now, it's there's no shame. Like, if I go into a particular client or new client and I say, oh, let's ask Jim. He's probably, you know, back from his tour that he just did in Europe, because not only is he my senior programmer, but he's also quite literally a rock star that tours for a few weeks a year. Like, there's no shame in that. They're like, oh, okay, he's touring in Europe right now? No problem. You know, or, oh, we need to wait for him to, you know, on whatever, Edinburgh time before we can ask that question.
You see,
there's a
complete
change in how people deal with that now.
I did not experience that. I have to say I'm very grateful for that. But I started my business in 2001, and I have the computer science degree. I am a nerd. But I never, just didn't have that kind of problem. Or if I did, I probably just ignored it and went about my business. But that's interesting.
My guess, Denise, is that you were already in the top industry that had that. So the top industry, computer and IT, they're kind of used to bringing on specialists because they have to as part of the team. And that's probably been going on for 30 years, like software development and everything. But it's these other industries that now are open to that, which is mind-boggling.
It's interesting because when I first started out, you know, I started out as a web developer, and then, of course, virtual assistants industry, online business management was just a natural progression for all of that. But I was one of the very few female web developers around, and I think there was some kind of, you know, almost a fascination with that, like, oh, you're a girl. You can build a website? And I had to kind of prove myself after that. But once I got going, and as you said at the top of the show, you know, referred, you know, I really set out to become a freelancer lead, as you put it. And that was always my goal, to be the best, to be referred, to build my business on references and referrals, and to I've never advertised ever, not once. I've never spent a penny on advertising. But when you do set out to deliver and over deliver and you have those repeat clients who will introduce you to anybody and everybody, you're kind of made.
That's true. That doesn't take away from some of the challenges that contract workers face, right? Like,
I'm sure
you've had this too in the past. I know I have. I still do. You know, we're looking at, there's a recent poll that NPR and Morris did, you know, literally just like 2 months ago. And they polled over 1,200 workers in the United States. And 49% of contract workers have an income that varies from month to month or seasonally. So we're looking at almost like a phenomenon that was reserved for small business, right? That was, you know, cash flow is king, and you have to take a look at when you're, you know, feast or famine, when you have all that money coming in or when it's just a trickle, like your bills don't vary. Like you still have to pay your rent every month.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so 49% of contract workers have this income that varies. So that's a new skill that people have to learn.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, from getting a paycheck every week to every 2 weeks that was exactly the same, to something that looked like, oh, I get to go to the club and treat everybody to the VIP room, and then, oh, okay, I can't pay my rent the next month.
Right,
you know,
right.
That kind of, you know, there's a whole host of challenges that now come out in this new economy. And by the way, maybe you're identifying with this as a listener, and maybe you're not, in the sense that, you know, one out of every three people right now are part of the gig economy, whether it's a side gig or whether it's full-time work.
Mm-hmm.
But in 2 years, we're looking at one out of every two. So that gives you an idea of the just the incredible growth, this exponential growth in this kind of temp or project-based on-demand area. And so there's a whole host of things that all of a sudden maybe you didn't think about, but either you're going to be on one side where you're going to be in this either by choice or not. Most people that are in this by choice love it. And I think that we then make terrible employees because we are so used to the flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that I'm able to talk to you this morning is awesome, right?
I know.
Or that I can pick up my kid from school.
Right. Listen, I deliberately became unemployable. A lot of emphasis there. Years ago, nobody could afford to hire me, and I won't be hired. I run with scissors. I don't play well with others. I want to bring my cat to work. I have to work from home. That's all there is to it. And I love it. I wouldn't have it any different. Is it a struggle sometimes? You bet. When I first started out, I didn't really treat it as a business. I was just doing it because I didn't want to, you know, got out of college, got my, you know, little degree that I'm not even sure why I bothered to do it, but I did it, and I did not want to have to get a job. So I gave myself 6 months, and I made this business, and I made it work. But you know what I didn't do? I didn't know how it grew so quickly that I had no systems in place. I mean, that first year or two was hell. I didn't treat myself as a business. I didn't treat myself as a small business owner. I was winging it every day. It's terrifying. It really was terrifying, but I did it.
So when you were first starting out and all of that was coming down and you know, you were blessed with growth, but at the same time cursed with having to
mm-hmm.
constantly basically be baptized by fire,
mm-hmm.
probably one of the first things, like a lot of small businesses discover, is not only cash flow, but getting paid. Like almost every small business that I've ever talked to has issues with getting paid at some point. You have a bad client, you know, they either delay payment or you don't get paid, or, you know, I've had a situation in my past where I had to take somebody to small claims court. And what the gig economy platforms, the promise of these platforms do that is so attractive for workers is that you get paid, right? You don't have to, you know, worry about that is what they're promising you, right? So you get hired on Upwork for a project. There's money that's put in escrow, and you get paid once those milestones are complete, and it can be along the way. Somebody rents my house up in the mountains on Airbnb. Airbnb takes the full amount from them when they book, puts it in an escrow account, and basically as soon as they check in, within 24 hours, I get the full amount of their stay, even if they choose to leave after one day, right? So that's incredibly attractive in terms of these platforms and the growth of these platforms. Because that's one thing with being a small business that really kind of sucks for most people is dealing with the accounting, bookkeeping, invoicing, getting paid on time, even the anxiety of knowing what you're worth, right? That in itself can be hard. And yet if I go on Upwork and I'm a particular specialist, I can get a real good sense pretty quickly to know what that is, what people are willing to pay per hour for that type of specialist. Mm-hmm. Sometimes discouraging. I think as a writer, I don't do copywriting. I only write for my own blog and I only write my own books. But the writers that I deal with on projects for my creative agency, incredibly talented people, always undervalued. Mm-hmm. Always undervalued. So, like, because why? Because I can go on Upwork and it's pennies per, you know, article or word. Mm-hmm. If I were to try to compare, and yet that has nothing to do with good writing, right?
Right.
Like that's something where you start to find how to make those type of distinctions. But that leads me to another point, which is one of the reasons that I wrote The Gig Is Up is not only because this is crazy, like this is all around us. We have to deal with it either on one side or another. You might find yourself there by choice or not. So how do you deal with that? And what I would like to give people and to give readers is really this understanding that one question and one question only matters, and that is, why choose you? Why choose you? Mm-hmm. It's an incredibly anxiety-producing question, obviously, for obvious reasons. And yet, if you embrace it, if you start to understand how to break that down and communicate what is known as your unique value proposition, your UVP, that can make all of the difference in taking away a lot of that anxiety, because you've done that work and understand how to brand yourself on whether it's a particular platform or something more general like LinkedIn. You start to understand what it is to stick your neck out there and get reviewed for certain things, and how those reviews can be incredibly valuable at helping you discover certain very unique points about yourself, because people will tell you why they choose you. Mm-hmm. And you can build
That's
on that.
True.
So there is kind of hope in becoming the standout and getting the work again and again and again for what you're really best at.
And I have found that along the way. And when people come to me and say, how do I get noticed? There's so many different ways. I mean, social media obviously is the best way to get noticed. LinkedIn, if you're business to business. But one of the things that you talk about is showcasing your best, showcasing your work, getting people to talk about you, getting people to share your work. And I think a lot of that, this is just my observation over the years, but I think when people really like you and they get to know you, maybe they haven't even worked with you, but they've seen work you've done for other people, and you're out there and you're sharing and you're connecting and you're sharing their work, even though maybe it's compatible with your own work, it doesn't matter. Listen, I don't feel like I have any competition. If I see that you're doing great work and I'm thinking, you know, my audience needs to see this, I share it. And because of that, and a lot of other things, but because of, you know, just the willingness to connect and communicate, I think you pick up an awful lot of audience traffic just by being naturally outgoing and sharing. What do you think?
I think that is all about kind of your viewpoint, right? Like what you're talking about is coming from an abundance mentality. Like I'm good at what I do. I get enough referrals. I get enough that's coming my way that I want to give back and share with the world other awesome people. And that's great. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people out there that don't feel that way. There's a lot of people that are like scared and they feel like if they're transparent that it's going to make it so somebody else steals that idea or, you know, takes that from them. And you know, so it's an interesting perspective because there are certain things that are proprietary. Like I work with an excellent SEO company for my clients. And for obvious reasons, they're not going to tell you all their tips and tricks. You know, they just run a different type of model. And that's okay. That's okay. So, you know, it depends on, I think, where you're at and what type of specialist you are. Certain things by their very nature are just a little bit more secretive than others.
I agree with you. But how do people, from people that you've worked with, how do you get them out of what I would call imposter syndrome? They're scared, they're worried. I hear this all the time in the VA industry. I just don't know what to charge, and I think you referenced that earlier. That's a biggie. And I think that really holds a lot of people back from really doing their best work.
I think that, first of all, you have to be willing to see and place yourself where you are in your midst of competitors. So in certain cases, obviously you do virtual assistant stuff, but in certain cases, certain people might be specialists in their local area. Because whatever they do every so often facilitate, like it, you need to have maybe that face-to-face interaction with the client that's beyond, you know, maybe you need to go to their business or something like that. So then we are looking at a different dynamic because we're saying, okay, one of the factors in why that person gets chosen is being available in their local area. So then you have to look at other people that are available in your local area. And see the market and see kind of what they're going for the particular skill set that they have. And then you can price accordingly. Mm-hmm. Virtual assisting is difficult because you are being compared with maybe somebody from the Philippines. And obviously somebody in the Philippines is paying less for rent than you are.
Mm-hmm.
So in that particular case, you have to understand what you bring that they're either – they either can't or are not willing to, and play those pieces up. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm worth X, Y, and Z because I'm in New York City. I know the best technology. I work with this particular, you know, group of companies that puts me on the cutting edge, and you're paying a slight premium for all of that. And by the way, my rent costs more than someone in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk about before how you have a bunch of Infusionsoft specialists on your team and that you are one. Like, that's a hard thing to find. That software is flipping confusing. I don't want to deal with it. And you even need to have a very particular analytical brain to even figure out how to, you know, create certain pieces of just the business thought process with that type of software.
Yeah, if you're working with funnels as we do, you know, moving more away from the virtual assistance industry, and we're business creators at this point. You know, we build funnels, websites, social media marketing. Virtual assistance does come into that to some degree, but it's not the sum total of what I do these days. And you do have to have a very logical, linear, analytical mind to build these things. And if you don't have that, you know, you can find a place on a team and be part of the production part of it. But if you think like I do and you build these things in your head, I build them in my sleep. It's amazing that I sleep at all. I mean, I can look at a website in my head, not even have to put it on paper, and see and feel exactly how it's going to work. It's just a gift, and I'm, you know, I'm glad I have it. But not everybody does that. So, you know, I would say find your lane and then look for other opportunities once you've figured out where you want to be in the gig economy. But don't get stuck in it. Find other opportunities as well.
But even if you are the absolute best, right, it doesn't matter if you're not willing to shout it from the rooftop. either you have to shout it from the rooftop or have somebody that's willing to shout it from a rooftop for you.
Exactly. And it's hard,
you know, so that's where it gets difficult too.
It is. It's very difficult because I did that for the first couple of years. You know, I was really unwilling to get out there and toot my own horn, as my grandma would say. And finally I just said, look, if I don't do it, my clients can do just so much, but I have got to get out there and say, hey, by the way, do you need help with this? I can help you. It was hard. It was, and I don't know why it was so hard. And I look back and I just cringe. And even still, I'll go, oh, I don't want to do that. But we have to.
So here's something interesting, and I'm going to flip it around and ask you a question. So what you just talked about is so commonplace, and especially with women, it's incredibly commonplace. Mm-hmm. And so you got to a place where you were able to live in the uncomfortable. Right, you were able to say, this is something that I need to do for myself and my business, and now you do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not like it, but you do it, and you do it very naturally. I mean, you've talked about what you do and how good you are several times during this podcast, and it hasn't come across as, you know, tooting your horn, right? So how has that – do you feel that just living in it? Like, in other words, you've done it so often now that it just becomes part of what you do? Because there's a huge difference between not doing it and then taking that first step towards understanding how to talk about yourself and your business and what you do well.
You know, what I think happened was once I finally opened up, because I am an introvert, I'm a highly committed introvert, and I, you know, I'm not shy, but it's difficult for me to kind of step out of my own comfort zone, and my own comfort zone is always towards solitude, has been all of my life. So for me to get out there and go, hey, by the way, you know, we build websites, we build sales funnels, but once I start, this is really what happened, and I'm glad you asked, because now I'm having to kind of go back down that path and find out how it happened. But what would happen, and this goes back to LinkedIn as well, you know, I finally got on LinkedIn and I started asking for reviews of my work. And they were stellar. And they made my heart sing. I was like, oh, okay. Well, if this is what people are saying, and clearly they mean it, or they wouldn't be put it in writing, or they wouldn't be referring me. But when your heart does that little pity-pat, and you go, oh, that is so nice, because now you're reading and hearing things from other people that you probably didn't know about your work or about yourself. And that makes it easier for you to get out there and say, hey, I can help you, you know, this is what we do. This is how we solve your pain points. Give us a call. But I had to involve other people, which is very uncomfortable for me, and get their thoughts and their input. Sorry, I hope I didn't cough on you just yet, just there. But, you know, once I started getting that positive feedback, it really did change how I viewed what I do in the world. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So you bring up an excellent point in all this. When you started getting these recommendations on LinkedIn and getting that positive feedback back, one of the things that that does is makes what you do meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And again and again and again, what we're seeing is the future of work is absolutely changing. Even for employees that are full-time, they want to feel like the work is meaningful. Even if they get thrown more money at them, they may not stay in a particular position if that work is not meaningful for them. So that you found that and then got that positive reinforcement allowed you to start to pinpoint on what was resonating with people from yourself. What those are, and everybody start taking notes, because I don't care who you are. If you are full-time employed, if you're a gig worker, if you're new to this stuff, everybody needs this, and that is you need to start building a folder on your computer that is all about you. This is your personal assets, okay? And what I mean by that is, let's say you get a review on LinkedIn or Yelp or Upwork. Take a screen capture of that. Label it. For me and my business, because why am I putting my neck out there? I want to be able to be in front of more people. I want to be able to speak in front of more people. Are you in New Orleans, by the way? Or close
no,
to it?
No, I'm closer to the Gulf. I'm in Lafayette.
Oh, closer to the Gulf. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so, yeah. So one of the recent speaking engagements that I was able to book is in New Orleans in November of this year. And it's a conference that I get to keynote. And it's something that, you know, you talk about making your heart sing, something that made my heart sing. Because the way that I was discovered was by referral, and then what does somebody do? The moment that they're thinking about hiring you, what do? They Google you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe your LinkedIn recommendation comes up, or your LinkedIn profile comes up, and maybe it's somewhere else, or maybe it's a Yelp thing, whatever it is. Maybe it's a YouTube video. But there's something about that secondary information that seals the deal for them,
mm-hmm.
that they say, that's who I want. And so when you are starting out, you need to build this. One of the quickest ways to do it is as soon as you get a recommendation, as soon as you get a review, screen capture it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to come back to that. Maybe you're going to include that in a video of yourself. Maybe you're going to include that as your email signature. You have to be able to reinforce those things that you do great.
Mm-hmm.
So that when someone's thinking, oh, gee, I need a keynote speaker. I need a dynamic female keynote speaker. Maybe they're going to think of me. Because, or maybe they're going to think about it because their friend is telling them, I need to book somebody. Have you seen Olga? Here you go. And that's how I've gotten all of my speaking gigs.
Mm-hmm.
I have a speakers bureau that basically books me when somebody calls them and says, oh, I saw Olga on YouTube. So I'm like, okay, so what are you guys doing? You know? But, you know, those are the things that they start to build. So at first you may not have any. Then you may have a couple. Then you start to refine your own message and your own offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And you change, right? Just like your business changed.
Right, you do. And one thing, and you made me think of this when you first started this topic. One thing that I think so many people don't do, and I bet you're guilty of this as well, we forget what we know. It's so easy for us that it just doesn't occur to us that other people don't know what we know. It's just too easy to happen. I was talking with a gal the other day. She wants to start up a freelance business. And I said, well, okay, let's go over what you know. And she said, well, I don't think I know much. I said, no. I said, I want you to follow yourself around for about 3 days. I want you to look at all the tools that you have. I want you to go back in your old work. She's a graphic designer. She's had a cancer scare, so she, you know, went off of work for a couple of years, and she's coming back now. So, you know, I said, I would imagine that you have forgotten a lot of the skills and the tools and the systems that you had. So I said, I want you to open up an Excel spreadsheet, follow yourself around, and we'll talk again next week. I got a Facebook email from her. She said, oh, my God, I didn't know how much I had forgotten. But we do it all the time.
That's an excellent point. About 5 years ago, I had an opportunity to grow my main business. And in order to do that, in order to take on kind of the volume of work that was coming our way, I would have had to kind of expand the team by about triple. And I looked at that and I said, what would I, like, is this the business that I want to be in? Is this something that I want to do? And as I looked at it more and more, at the time my daughter was like in third grade, and I said, you know, I don't think I want to be working with a team at exactly 3:30 in the afternoon when I want to be picking up my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be the one that's picking her up. I want to see that face that, you know, is just pure joy when you see him at the end of the day. And I'm privileged enough to where I can make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a choice that I can make. But that also meant that I couldn't do something else, right? So if you're choosing one path, you can't choose another path, right? And you have to be okay with it. So all of a sudden it's like, well, maybe I don't want to grow the business by this much. Maybe there's a way that I can kind of do something else. And yet I still felt the need to reach more people. Because as you mentioned, you sometimes think that what you know, everybody knows. I was absolutely shocked after doing web design and marketing for basically 20 years now that not everybody started with the unique value proposition, that not everybody first sat down and said, let's take a look at these market differentiators, why choose you, and then build around that. And so in my company, we don't move one pixel until we have an understanding of what that is. And most of the time, the client doesn't have an understanding of what that is until we start talking to them. And that is the most valuable service that we provide, not moving pixels around. Many people can move pixels around. So after seeing time and time again that most people don't start there, I wanted to write a book asking people to start there and explaining to them how easy that is to do, or difficult in some cases, but how you can take those steps. And that's where I decided to write Sell Local, Think Global. That's my first book. And that came out in the end of 2014, beginning of 2015. So that in itself was a labor of love. And I've been able to see, just by people contacting me from around the world, because that book has now been translated into Chinese and also randomly Indonesian. I thought it would be a good excuse to go visit Bali. But, you know, getting contacted back from people, all that connection from all over the world, that's something that I couldn't have done just by expanding my business. Sure, I could have helped maybe twice the amount of businesses in Southern California, but this book has been out there for thousands. So once again, here I am saying, people, you got to look around. The gig economy is here. There are so many things you can do to embrace this opportunity and not be scared by it. And that's why you have The Gig Is Up.
And just so people know, when and I had the same thing when your publicist contacted me and she said, well, she's got this book called The Gig Is Up. And I thought, what in the world does that mean? The Gig Is Up. You know, I went back to film noir movies, like The Gig Is Up, put your hands in the air. But when I saw the book cover, there's a big arrow that says The Gig Is Up, obviously meaning going up, 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 up. Okay, now that makes sense. But one of the things, Olga, I wanted to chat about very quickly is, because we've got about 12 minutes, but one of the things that I think a lot of people don't talk about, or if they are talking about it, I'm not hearing much about it, and I think it needs to be explored, is when you say no, and you reference that just then, you know, saying, do I want to go ahead and take on this bigger of a business, or do I want to go in a different way? Oftentimes, and I know people who are first starting out, they're going to take that money, whatever money it is, whether it's $15 an hour, $35 an hour, whatever it is, they're going to grab for it because, like you said, they've got to pay their rent. That's oftentimes, and I know this, you know, sounds contrarian, but that's oftentimes the absolute worst thing you can do. If you can't do the work, if you can't deliver, if you're just grasping for the quick little paycheck and you either deliver a subpar product or you don't deliver it at all, it's a fairly small community on the internet, believe it or not. I know we've got thousands and thousands and thousands of people, millions of websites, but we get to where we kind of know one another. We know who's good. We know who's the elite. We know who's garbage. And that gets talked around almost as much or possibly more than who are the really good ones. Because if you have had a rotten experience with a virtual assistant or a web developer, you're going to talk about that, right? You are going to moan and complain to everybody in earshot. So sometimes,
well, I think that
can't do it. Sorry.
I think that that's just kind of knowing your, you know, limitations. I think that if you're just going to accept something, but you really can't deliver based on your own skill set, there's a difference between, and this is maybe this is because it's so difficult to understand, kind of where that line is. But a lot of times you can take something on if you have it in you, but you just don't know it yet, right? Like, that's a confidence problem. But if you get hired to do C++ programming and you don't know anything about C++ programming, then you're not going to deliver. There's just no way.
No.
Right? And so we're talking about kind of two different things there.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times I think the message is confused, because the message from a lot of kind of internet evangelists out there and motivational speakers is just leap, just go, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's an asterisk there. And that is, you know, yes, just leap, just do it, because most of the time it's the fear that keeps us back. But if it's truly that you don't know what you're doing, please don't fly a plane if you don't know how to fly
right.
a plane.
Right. Exactly. And whatever goes up comes down, right? You're going to crash. I promise you're going to crash. And here's the thing. I mean, if you have the wherewithal and you think, you know, yeah, I might kind of sort of be able to do this, but let me give it some thought and I'll try to find somebody who does have these skills and partner with them and split the fee. So there are ways to do it. I'm not saying just don't turn it down, but there have been times in my career where for some reason I just didn't like a client or a potential client. And here's the thing, if I don't like you, I'm not going to work with you. You know, your spidey sense goes off and you're thinking, no. I've done it twice and both times I was remarkably sorry and I haven't done it again. But, you know, that's kind of being aware of, you know, what you want to do, what you want to bring into your business and where you want to go and build with it. And I'm not at all saying don't get into any of these industries and, you know, try to grow, do it. But be very aware of what you're offering and how you're delivering. I think that's the big point I'm trying to make. How are you delivering? Are you really, really delivering, whether you bring in help, whether you do it on your own, whether you have to ask for an extension so you can do a bit of training, whatever it is, are you delivering your best, whatever your best is at that time? I think that's an important question.
Yeah, I like how you put that. I think that a lot of times we have all this information at our fingertips. So then why do you need this book? You know, why do you need The Gig Is Up? Because you are stuck knowing what the next step is. You are stuck knowing what to type in to Google or YouTube. So hopefully this gives you a little change in perspective and you know what that next step is. So even if you don't know exactly how to do it, at least you can research it and start looking at the tools that will help you get there.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that you mentioned in our kind of our pre-interview, and I'm not even sure I'm going to pronounce this properly, the robopocalypse. Say it for me. I have a southern tongue. I can't do that.
So one of the things when we talk about the future of work is automation, artificial intelligence, machine learning, and we're seeing that come up all around us. There's a reason why we now have what I call the wiretap in our own homes, as in Amazon Echo, Google, you know, the now the HomePod as well, like the HomePod, sorry. All of those types of technologies are dependent on machine learning and specifically speech. There's a reason why for a long time, Google had its own free 411 directory service. Do you remember that?
I do.
You could call into Google instead of calling 411 and save yourself the 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And you could, you know, ask it, and it would tell you. And all it was doing was gathering people's natural voice paths. It was basically feeding that into data, and it was creating voice recognition. And so for the first time ever in 2017, I think it was early 2017, about a year ago, that voice recognition like got to such a great point that it upgraded things like Google Translate immensely. Because what was happening is basically Google, and I'm sure Amazon did the same thing, but Google created its own language. So instead of translating from, let's say, English to French, Google Translate translates from English to Google language to French. So it has a common denominator underlying language. So, of course, that type of speed and recognition, we're getting to the point where it was like 97% human speech recognition. That's why you can just talk and mumble to your Amazon Echo and it'll play the song that you want off of Spotify. So with all that, of course, there's a huge anxiety, like that machines are going to take over our jobs, that automation is going to take over. In fact, luminaries like Elon Musk have talked about a universal wage even, because they're convinced that robots will take all of us out and then we'll have nothing left to do. That is a little bit premature.
When we really
look at the results of AI, we should be at a point where our productivity as a country is higher, right? That's what you would think. If robots are so much more efficient than humans, then we should see an extreme value in that productivity and see that as in a result in our like GDP. And that's not true. Because of China. Because of, you know, when we talk about jobs and where jobs have gone, it's not necessarily the machines. It's the fact that all of us are pressing the buy button on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And we're choosing the goods that are manufactured somewhere other than Louisiana. So, you know, we all have kind of a role in that. And so it's interesting. We'd much rather blame the machines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that this isn't going to change the future of work, because it absolutely is. But it's not that we're there yet. I think it's important to understand where these changes are coming from. And in the book, I kind of relay a kind of funny thing, which is there were phone cases sold on Amazon where they let an AI bot choose the images for the phone cases and then make it so it's like very personalized, right? So like you're searching for something in the Amazon search box and you're going to come across this video case. And what they did was they based it on logic of, well, let's take the most popular stock photos and put them on these phone cases.
Mm-hmm.
Here was the problem. Some of the most popular stock photos you'd never buy for a phone case, like an old man in a diaper.
Oh, yes.
So there you go. There's something where maybe some human taste still remains. We still need to be able to choose certain things for ourselves and not let robots choose them.
Because
an old man in a diaper is the most downloaded stock photo does not mean you want it for a phone case.
Oh, I'm going to have to go brush my brain. Oh, God. That's just horrible. Yeah, and, you know, being the nerd that I am, I'm really careful about all of these things. But I also am in love with chatbots. So, you know, there's a time and a place for everything. There really is. Listen, Olga, it has been amazing speaking with you. So where can people find you on the web?
Super simple, chunkofchange.com. You know, I originally started chunkofchange.com with the thought that small changes add up big. You know, we don't need to get overwhelmed by everything that's out there. Just take it one step at a time, a little change in perspective, a little change in process, and you'll be in a better place tomorrow.
I'm so glad you said that. I was working on a project this morning. Friday is my kind of me day. This is when I ostensibly work on my projects. And I was out in my yard pulling up everything that's dead out there, because in Louisiana, we had snow that stayed on the ground for 3 days, and then we had multiple days of really frozen ground after that. And our poor plants, 90 seconds, and our poor plants just went, I'm not coming back. So I've been out there, you know, trying to pull out the dead stuff, and it's, you know, it's good exercise, fresh air. And all of a sudden I came up with an idea for this new project that I want to work on, and it's very much in keeping with what you just said. So there are no accidents, right? We were meant to speak. So listen, thank you so much, and thank you for the book. I mean, I am about halfway through it, and I will definitely leave an Amazon review for you. It's a great book.
Thank you so much.
It's a good book.
You know,
tell people where they can find
Amazon
out.
Reviews are so hard to get, so thank you very much.
I know. I have no idea why that is. But anyway, it has been my pleasure speaking with you today, and I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you shared with our audience, and I hope you'll come back again soon.
Thank you, Denise. It's been a pleasure.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.